Today's Unseminary podcast episode is brought to you by Regal Theater Church, the only theater company providing full-service consultation for churches wanting to create dynamic worship services in familiar, culturally relevant venues, the local movie theater, with lots of parking, spacious lobbies, plenty of bathrooms, and a perfect view of the screen from a comfortable seat. Regal theaters are ideal for church plants and multi-sites. Learn more at regaltheaterchurch.com or call their incredible team at 1-800-792-8244 today.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey, happy Thursday, everybody. It's Rich Birch from the Unseminary Podcast. I hope you have had a great week. This month, we are celebrating over 3 years and 180 plus episodes of the Unseminary Podcast by going global, by looking at church leaders from around the world. Today, we are going all the way to South Africa to visit with a leader by the name of Ross Lester. And Ross is a pretty amazing leader. He is leading a multi-ethnic, multi-cultural church in a part of the world where race really has mattered in a pretty significant manner. And I think you're going to love this interview. You're going to love to hear more about it. I also just want to remind you that on November 1st, we're launching my very first book. It's called Unreasonable Churches. And you can find out more about that at unreasonablechurches.com, where you can get a sample chapter and actually get to the front of the line to learn more about the book as we roll out here at the end of the month. I would love for you to pick up a copy or three for your friends in ministry. Maybe it makes a great Christmas gift. I know that seems a little early, but that time is coming this year. Well, let's jump in with Ross Lester. I think you're going to love this interview. You're going to love hearing more about how God is using his church.
This is the Unseminary Podcast, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
We've got Ross Lester with us all the way from Johannesburg, South Africa. He is the pastor at Bryanston Bible Church, a great church, and I'm really looking forward to learning from you today, Ross. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Rich. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you've taken some time out with us. I'd love to hear more about South Africa. Give us a sense of kind of the spiritual climate. You know, how has the history of your country impacting, you know, the gospel? Give us a sense of South Africa.
All right. I think South Africa is a land of tremendous opportunity and a land of tremendous obstacles at the same time, in terms of church work and the gospel. It was kind of the darling of the world 20 years ago with the end of apartheid and Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu's vision of a rainbow nation. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing now is just how naive some of that vision was in terms of implementation. Mm. And so the realities of a post-colonial and still very racially divided society are really coming home to roost. Mm-hmm. And so there's major obstacles. There's rampant poverty, highest HIV infection rates in the world. Mm. In South Africa alone, there's over 5 million orphan or vulnerable children. Wow. And so massive gap between rich and poor. So major obstacles, major racial gaps and inequalities there as well. But major opportunities because God's doing something in sub-Saharan Africa and in South Africa. And so sub-Saharan Africa is where Christianity is growing fastest anywhere in the world. It's reckoned that in 10 years from now, Africa would have the most Christians of any continent in the world. And the median age of a Christian in sub-Saharan Africa is 19. So there's massive opportunity for the gospel if you can get this gospel narrative really into the hearts of people in what looks like a place full of obstacles. You can also create a great deal of opportunity for the next generation of Christians in this part of the world and unbelievers in this part of the world to experience the hope of the gospel. So it's an exciting place to be, exciting place to minister. No shortage of difficulties, but plenty of opportunity. Hmm.
Now, did you grow up in Johannesburg and in the specific the kind of part of the country that you're serving in today?
Yeah, I did. Born and raised, kind of fourth generation South African, and so grew up right through the fall of apartheid, and spent some time in the U.S. living there, but most of my time has been in Johannesburg.
Hmm. Amazing. Well, why don't you give us a sense of kind of, you know, your church, your community, you know, how is what you're leading, you know, impacting your community with the gospel? It's incredible to hear, you know, the growth of the kingdom and how many people are, you know, becoming Christ followers in South Africa and sub-Saharan Africa. But tell us about what's going on at your church.
So, I'm at a church called BBC, Bryanston Bible Church. Mm-hmm. It's about 45 years old, mm-hmm. And so was part of a quite a conservative denomination known as the Christian Brethren, and then moved away from that about 20 years ago, and has kind of been trying to discover its own identity and its own place in the world. It's in probably the most affluent neighborhood on the continent, which again has its challenges because you've got the poorest of the poor living a couple of miles away, and then really affluent people living behind massive walls trying to not let that tension just overwhelm them all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we're a couple of thousand people now just trying to figure it out. Lots of kids, lots of young families. Growing towards multiculturalism, growing towards racial integration, because you don't see much of that in churches in South Africa.
Wow.
And trying to be a faithful church that plants other churches and maybe births a movement of gospel-centered multicultural churches in South Africa.
There's a lot to unpack there. I'd love to, if I'm not stepping on toes, I'd love to hear more about kind of multiracial thing and how you're making steps in that direction. Obviously, I think a lot of our listeners, you know, from the States can identify with the segregation that just naturally happens. But obviously that takes on even, you know, a different complexion in your community. How are you making steps towards that at your church?
Yeah, it is different here because the oppressor was the minority. Mm-hmm. And so that's got its own complexities. Mm-hmm. And so we're a majority white church, but that makes us a majority minority church, which in the rest of the world is, you know, like, I don't know, seen as more acceptable, but here it's really not. So there's interesting dynamics at play there. So what we've tried to do is just say, okay, apartheid put us, white South Africans, in a position of privilege. There's no denying that we benefited off of an illegitimate system. Mm-hmm. How do we own that, repent of that, and then pay it back? How do we pay back privilege? How do we take the position that we're in, and the education that we've received, the wealth that we have available to us because of the wickedness of that system, and how do we pay that back? And the best way we can see is paying that back is through raising black African leaders who will replace us, and sowing the riches of the resources that were sown into us, sowing into young black African leaders so that they can really take the charge into the next generation. And so we haven't really tried to put band-aids on a cancer by just window dressing in terms of music styles, that kind of stuff that will come. Our heart has really been to change the demographic of the church from the leadership down. And so really been trying to sow into young black Africans, raising them up to maturity, appointing them as elders when they're ready, sending them out as church planters, because then leadership is viewed as diverse, and then the congregation shifts from there. And so it's the slower route by far, but we think it's going to yield more fruit than just trying to make some quick fix changes to try to get a more diverse group of people in the room.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that's a great thing for people to lean in on, that what you're, you know, pursuing there is a long-term solution, but you're really trying to address the hard issue rather than let's just window dress and let's kind of paint over, you know, an issue. And I appreciate that. That's amazing. What do kind of weekends look like, or what is the kind of the style of your ministry and the, you know, the approach look like, and how does that connect, you know, with the culture you're trying to reach?
Yeah, so because we're a church that was purely white during apartheid, so there's some throwover legacy from that.
Right.
And so we still are kind of Western in our worship styles, but are trying to integrate and change that. Mm-hmm. We don't have a very big room, so we've got a 450-seater room, so we've got to do four gatherings on a Sunday.
Wow.
And so your typical African, black African gathering would be long and kind of left with lots of flow, but we can't go there because we've got to get people in and out
You gotta process
four times on a Sunday. Right. So what we're trying to do is, so our services would look very similar, I think, to someone in the US. We're an Acts 29 church, and so if you know what Acts 29 church services look like, a lot like that. But what we're trying to do is bring multilingualism in, and some more multicultural representation still contained in kind of our Western worship style, which is just where we find ourselves. So
talk about the multilingualism. How are you doing that? How are you achieving that?
Yeah. So South Africa has 11 official languages. And so
that's amazing.
It's complex. And so we find just little things. We're just starting to do this now. Just acknowledging that you would have that many languages in the room is a good thing. So just in terms of greetings, you know, your announcer, when he's greeting the congregation, greet in more than one language. We're trying to start sing in more than one language in a way that we hope isn't patronizing. Mm-hmm. And so just those little nods, those subtle things to just say, we acknowledge this as a value, that there's a tapestry of language and culture in the room, and we want to acknowledge that.
I wonder if you could talk about, I'd love to hear more about the, you know, you acknowledge that, you know, your suburb is obviously, you know, at the kind of top of the scale economically for your community, maybe the entire continent, which is amazing. And how are you, obviously a part of the gospel is reaching out to the poor among us. And yeah. you have the unique, you know, extreme example of that it's literally right at your doorstep or right outside the wall. Give us a sense of how your church is dealing with that reality.
Yeah, so a couple of things. We spend 30 to 35% of our budget on justice and mercy projects.
Wow.
Which we just
Wait a second. We're going to back up here. We're going to back this one up. 30 to 35% of your offering ends up in justice or outreach ministries.
Yeah. Wow. So spent outside of the walls, usually on the poorest of the poor, widows and orphans. Yeah. And again, that's just that paying back privilege thing. You go, okay, you're privileged. And you got to pay this back. So, wow. So that's a value of ours. Something we hope to defend.
What does that look like? How are you? What are those? You know, how are you giving that? What is that? Where is it? Programs? Are there other ministries that you're supporting? Are you doing direct kind of work? What does that look like?
Yeah, a combo of both. So we align with Justice and Mercy projects that really meet the end of helping the vulnerable and preaching the gospel. So we want to see those two things colliding. And so if we can find meaningful partners that do both those things, then we want to fund and partake and participate in their work. But then we've got some really good projects that we run ourselves. So just down the road from this neighborhood is a river that runs, and there's a whole bunch of homeless men that live in that river. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a feeding and discipleship scheme that runs from the church building, which the neighborhood has by and large hated.
that's a global reality. Every neighborhood, I don't like when the church actually does what the church is supposed to do.
Trying to incorporate those men into the life of the church. So not just making it a feeding scheme, but trying to give them respect and identity, welcome them with warmth into the life and the rhythms of the congregation. And pull them in that way. So we do that. We're working in an informal settlement called Kaya Sands, which is a few kilometers away from us as well, where you've got hundreds of kids who are just their parents are off looking for work. So they're not at preschool. They're not being looked after. And so we've got a number of projects reaching out to those kids and their mothers as well. So. Hmm.
Some listeners might be interested in, you know, how your church is impacted by or aiding, you know, the HIV/AIDS, you know, pandemic. You know, for folks that don't know, at one point South Africa really wasn't acknowledging, you know, the HIV issue within its own borders, but then that has turned around. You talked about it earlier. You know, unfortunately you don't want to be at the top of that list, but unfortunately is the highest percentage of infections in the world. How does that impact your church? What does that look like? How are you, you know, kind of aiding that issue?
Yeah, so I mean, again, mainly in our Justice Mercy projects, education is a massive angle that you got to take on, and understanding. I mean, this. I hope I don't offend your US viewers. Understanding the African context as well, and just having some empathy and sympathy towards that, and starting to understand that maybe a Westerner with a Bible in his hand who isn't abstaining from sex, arriving to tell a 14-year-old girl that she has to abstain, it doesn't always work. It's trying to educate people on other ways that they can prevent infection as well. And so we don't see that as a dilution of the gospel message. We want to call people to sexual purity, but we also only really expect Christians to act like Christians. And calling non-Christians to act like Christians doesn't work. And so we've seen those campaigns coming from the West, and they haven't yielded fruit in this part of the world. And so just trying to get an understanding with that and really pushing towards education, both in our congregation, but then also in the projects that we partner with. And then helping to clean up the mess. So really pushing towards caring for AIDS orphans, because there's millions of them. Right. So you really got to push to that.
Amazing. This has been super encouraging to hear and just learn a little bit more about your church. What else would you, when you think about, you know, I'm asking you to kind of speak to our U.S. listeners. You know, there's a vast majority of people that listen to this podcast are church leaders and from the States. And, you know, how would you say kind of looking into our culture, and you studied here for a while, so you have a good sense of, you know, what's happening here. What are some of those lessons that you can apply from, you know, your experience to us? And what are some things we should be thinking about?
Yeah, so a few things. I mean, I think what I see happening in the U.S. at the moment is evangelical Christianity being pushed to the fringes. Mm. And there's a lot of panic about that in society. And I understand that, because it's been right at the center of kind of the lifeblood of American identity for a long time. But that's where Christianity flourishes, is on the fringes, where you're sojourners and aliens and exiles in a strange land. Mm-hmm. And U.S. Christians are going to have to get used to being those things and living like those things, exiles in their own land and sojourners and aliens. Some energy is going to need to go to kind of just owning that identity, and then living that identity is good news. You know, when I look at the book of Acts, people loved the actions of the early church and hated their doctrine. And that's where I think U.S. Christians are being pushed towards. But they're only going to love your actions if your actions are evident. Mm. So the days of cultural Christianity, I think, are over. Mm-hmm. But I think the days of being real Christ followers is exciting. Mm-hmm. If people can own it. It will be hard. There'll be persecution. That's a given. Mm-hmm. But I think you'll get a true core of Christianity starting to emerge. And so that would be the one thing. I mean, in line with that a little bit is a lot of the arguments that I see coming out of the West about, like, you've got to be careful not to engage in a social gospel. Mm. No one has those arguments in the developed world. When you've got starving kids, you're going like, right, the gospel mandates I must feed these kids.
Right.
And I'm not too worried about doing that in a way that might accuse me of being part of the social gospel. I'm doing it because of Jesus Christ. Mm. And He alone is God, and He died for me, and He died for these kids, and He breathed His image and likeness into these children. And so I'm not going to sit around and pontificate about, is this blurring a line of the true gospel? It's like, no, it's a natural outworking of my love and affection for Christ. And so there's a lot of debate that happens in the West that doesn't happen in the rest of the world, because the need is too great. So I'm a doctrine guy, so defend good doctrine, but live this thing out.
No, absolutely. No, I appreciate that. I think that's a good word. I hope people listened in and leaned in there. Another issue kind of related, you know, I think there continues to be an awakening, a concern about racial reconciliation in our country. Do you have anything to speak to that? Obviously the process that your homeland's been through has been amazing. Anything that you, from that perspective, that you could kind of speak into to our experience here in the States?
Yeah, I think people have got to be prepared to have uncomfortable conversations, this kind of notion of color blindness doesn't work. And so if we just say we're colorblind, we're in denial. So I think we've got to get into some conversations where we're empathetic listeners to start with, instead of just guys shouting down another people group. Mm-hmm. And I think this is particularly dangerous for white Americans, because you're a vast majority there. And so you can shout down dissenting voices. But I think the gospel, which has removed the wall of hostility between people of different ethnic groups, to Ephesians 2, really needs to be driving us to be listeners and to be compassionate listeners, and to be agents of change. So, like, the big thing that I've seen here is people owning and understanding whiteness and the privilege that comes with that, not defending against that, just going, yep, I've benefited from my pigmentation a great deal. Now, what do I do? Mm. If people get to that point, I see a lot of barriers coming down.
So. Absolutely. This has been fantastic. Anything you want to share before we wrap up today?
Yeah, man. I just think church leaders out there, just do what Christ asks you to do, which is to make disciples. Don't buy into the hype of selling religious goods and services. Win people to Christ, disciple them to maturity, and just do it again and again and again and again. If God gives you lots of people, praise Him. If He gives you a few people, stay faithful with them, but simplify it. Just make disciples. Just honor Christ that way. That's what we're called to do.
Very cool. Ross, if people want to get in touch with you or with the church, how can they do that?
The website for the church is bbc.org.za. And my Twitter handle is @RossLester.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Rich, thanks for having me, brother.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter @RichBurch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.